There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
You're listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, a Texas Tech athletics podcast where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael.
All right, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I am your host, Spencer, joined by Michael. Michael, what's up, man?
I am trying to find a track uniform that will fit me to celebrate the men's national championship. Just another day in the life of men's track and field here.
I was going to say, just another national title? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just a normal Tuesday in March shopping online. I don't think it's a good fit for me. I don't think it's a good look.
I was listening to another podcast. It's a true crime podcast, and
me wearing that would be a true crime. So that is a good segue.
They had made reference or mentioned that one of the subjects in the story had gifted somebody a track suit. I was like, oh my gosh, what year are we in? It was in the '80s, by the way, but
they're coming back. Where did I see that? Oh, I think it was in the Discord actually, when Adidas was officially announced, everybody was psyched about getting some Texas Tech themed track suits. Hopefully if the Adidas executives are listening, which many are, I'm sure it's on their short list.
Saturday was a good day for Texas Tech athletics. You had Tech baseball winning. You had a pretty exciting and definitive basketball victory over the Bears, over the Waco. And then you had the indoor team winning the national title.
Pretty nice little Saturday.
Yeah. We'll just
that's
sports weekend ended on Saturday.
That's our agenda on the podcast. That's it. Yeah. Just reminisce that one win. We don't need to talk about the other two Texas games. It's fine.
We do though. We do.
I had a feeling you'd get into them either way.
I'm going to save it for when we get to baseball, okay, yes. But it's going to wrap up the last time you played in all three sports.
Oof.
Yeah. We'll talk about basketball because the Big 12 tournament started today. Texas Tech doesn't play until Thursday with a double bye, which is just a thing of beauty. As a 4 seed, you get the first 2 rounds off. You will face the winner of, I don't even know who won, UCF or Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I'm going to look that up so that when we get to it, we will know.
One of those
right
two.
Right now, it's a mystery. It's a mystery.
One of the, whoever won today will face BYU, and the winner of that game will play them Thursday morning. We'll do Big 12 standings and recap about how all that went down. Michael, I have this in notes, but be thinking about a regular season grade for McCaslin and his staff in their first year.
Okay. All right.
And then the rest of the Big 12, if you want to do that, we talk about how our preseason projections and predictions turned out. Newsflash, neither one of us was better than 500. So just take that. And then we'll talk baseball.
Vegas. Hey, that's what Vegas wants.
Yeah.
They want, I mean, they set the lines. I feel like we did something like very similar to that with football. I think when we picked the wins, losses in the Big 12 or something, we were even Steven on those as well. So good job, Vegas. You got us again.
He got us again. Yeah. And then we'll talk baseball. We'll talk about the weekend series that was, where fundamentals went out the window and you had so many errors. Poor base running, mental lapses, so many failures to hit with runners in scoring position. And how the Longhorns were able to capitalize on all those. Give broader view about like where you're at so far in terms of stats and performance. And then look ahead to this weekend when you hit the road to take on the Waco baseball team. So the only thing I think we'll start with football, though, quick mention that spring practice, when we brought it up last time, or maybe the week before, but spring practice starts Tuesday, a week from today. So March 19th, and then you get 3.5 weeks of practice or so, and then spring game down in Midland. So be on the lookout for all those spring practice updates and tidbits and notebooks and whatever you want to call them.
Yes.
All right, basketball. You want to do let's do Lady Raiders first. What do you think?
I think so.
All right.
Yeah, so the Lady Raiders, after unfortunately ending the regular season on a 9-game losing streak, did bounce back, did beat Houston in the first game. That's right, in the first game of the Big 12 tournament, the third time they beat the Cougars this year. Are they the Lady Cougars? I don't know. Seems redundant, depending upon
quite redundant. Who you ask. Yes, so, you got me on that one. Oh,
yeah. I just remember there was an unfortunate team. I think it was Graham. They had the Lady Steers, which was,
you can't call them cows.
Yeah. You've kind of limited yourself when you assign a gender to your mascot right off the bat. So anyway, Graham Steers, go Steers. Lady Raiders, though, did take down Houston 74-60. They cruised to that victory pretty much. So it was great to see that they weren't a one and done in Kansas City. Did fall to Baylor the next day, though, an 11 a.m. tip. Hmm. Baylor was ranked number 17th, or they are number 17th in the country right now. Lost 60-71. And since the Lady Raiders are out, I quit paying attention. So I'm not sure how the Big 12 tournament turned out. Same. For the ladies. But there is good news. I mean, nothing's certain yet. You know, last year they were able to host the two rounds in the WNIT, and they defeated UTEP and SMU here in Lubbock before falling to Arkansas. Arkansas then lost to Kansas, and Kansas won the whole thing. They won the entire WNIT last year. So also Sunday night, and we'll get to it too, you know, the NCAA men's tournament selection Sunday is also, it's just a big Sunday. There's a lot going on.
Big Sunday.
So during that same time, the Lady Raiders could see themselves back in the WNIT. They have a very similar record that they did last year, slightly worse, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're back in it, but possibly not hosting. Although they do have, you know, Texas Tech and Lubbock have excellent facilities for hosting, so that still could be in play. But last year they finished 18-14, 6-12 in conference. And this year they finished 17-16, 5-13 in conference. So very similar records, and a possibility to continue on into the postseason. Just won't really know until everyone else knows Sunday night. But I would, you know, finishing 12th in the Big 12 standings, I would call that disappointing, you know, having one less win than last year. But I'm still very optimistic about this team with how young they are and how many of their role makers are young, their role players, role makers. And I feel like there's still a lot of good there. And I think the Facebook crowd is getting frustrated, but don't believe the Facebook crowd. They're a tough crowd. But you know, Gerlich's doing a great job recruiting. I feel like this year was kind of a, I don't think the trajectory went up or down. It just kind of stayed level from last year. So hopefully next year we'll see it. We'll see a significant jump in the right direction. But the basketball is, I feel like for the most part, well coached. I just wish they could have put up a better fight offensively in this skid. The last half of the season was really, really tough. A lot of 6-point quarters or 8-point quarters, and that's obviously not going to get it done.
Yeah. Well, here's to Selection Sunday. Lady Raiders will hear their name called in a favorable matchup, seeding, bracketology of sorts. Men, I think, are a little bit more firm in their position, their hopes for what should come on Sunday, regardless of their performance in the Big 12 tournament. They only would have to win 3 games to win the whole thing, whereas, you know, one of these play-in teams would have to win 5. Not that Red Raiders need to win the tournament to make it in. I think their victory on Saturday over Baylor did a lot to solidify their positioning and actually shot up some of the seed projections on some bracket experts boards. Losing wouldn't have hurt that bad, but winning certainly propelled you into a higher seed conversation. So you finished the year 22-9, single digit losses in the regular season, which I think is awesome. More than 20 wins. 2 games above 500 in Big 12 play, 11-7. Did finish the season ranked number 25. You got in on the last AP poll. And then in terms of where you finished in the Big 12, technically, you're 4 seed in the Big 12 tournament, but you finished with the third best record. You tied for the third best record, 11-7. You and Baylor were tied, and I guess they have whatever tiebreaker it is since you split the series, but they took the 3 seed and you have the 4. Newcomers Houston end up winning the Big 12 regular season title. Then Iowa State. Both of those I think are a little bit of a surprise. Not that Houston was good, but good enough to jump in and immediately win the conference. Iowa State I think was a lot better than we anticipated. We thought they may be good, but they look salty.
Yes.
Baylor at 3, I think that was also another surprise. Like you look all up and down, because I think Texas was picked pretty high. They finished 7th. Kansas fell all the way to 6th. BYU is a newcomer, came up to 5th. TCU 8, Oklahoma 9, Kansas State 10, Cincinnati 11, UCF 12, Oklahoma State 13, West Virginia 14. So that's how you, you're going to seed out the Big 12 tournament. Granted, we've already started that. You had Oklahoma State and UCF play, as well as West Virginia as a 14, taking on Cincinnati the 11.
Would you like an update?
I would love an update.
Okay. Cincinnati defeated West Virginia 90-85.
Okay.
But the game that we care most about, UCF, took down Oklahoma State 77-62. So UCF will go on to face BYU tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. So by tomorrow, I mean Wednesday, 11:30 a.m. And of course, the winner of that game will go on to face Texas Tech Thursday at 11:30 a.m.
Yep. On the Texas Tech side of the bracket, you'll also have Oklahoma and TCU 8-9 playing Wednesday afternoon. Winner of that game gets the distinct pleasure of facing off number 1 seed Houston.
Ouch.
So the winner of the Tech game and Houston game will play each other in the semifinals before heading to the championship game on Saturday. On the other side of the bracket, you've got Kansas State and Texas facing off, and then Cincinnati and Kansas. One second.
Oh, you're good. You're good. So, yeah, Cincinnati and Kansas will face off on Thursday at 8:30 p.m. And, of course, then the winner of that game will go on to face Baylor. I'm just really surprised at how, you know, you already touched on it, Spencer, but I thought Houston would be good. I thought they would be fighting for second or third. I assumed Baylor would be kind of up there. And of course Kansas, but yeah, just as good as Houston, as good as I thought Houston would be, they still just dominated. They were way better than I had could have possibly envisioned. So the jump to the Big 12 was not a big leap for them to make.
No.
And, you know, Shed, I've said it before, but you know, all you Houston fans who are listening, I'm sure there's so many of you. You're dozens. Welcome. You're welcome. Because I think when he demolished Texas Tech in Houston in January, that was what he needed. He needed that. And then he went on to just be fantastic the rest of the conference season.
Sure did. Not only did Houston lock up number one seed, they are currently ranked number one and in the hunt for the number one overall seed. So,
yeah. A lot going for the Cougars right there.
Going to be a tough out. All right. Two questions. One, let's start with location of the Big 12 tournament. I think it's moved around a little bit, but maybe this is my my Texas Central focus here. Why is the Metroplex? Why is Dallas DFW not hosting everything? It's the home of the conference offices. Why aren't we playing the Big 12 tournament at the American Airlines Center or Dickies even? Well, why don't we mess around with this? It should be everything should be hosted in Dallas. You've got nothing to lose here except for some whiny Iowa State fans.
Well, and I guess the Kansas fans would not enjoy a longer drive. I'd imagine it's closer to Manhattan to be in Kansas City as well. But I know there's tradition there, and every time that gets brought up, I kind of talk myself back into, well, it does, okay, that's fine. They can have basketball because it is in the Midwest sort of, and that is a traditionally basketball rich part of the country. Of course, basketball was invented next state over. So I do think it's,
does that have any bearing on where the Big 12 tournaments are?
Maybe it shouldn't, but it seems to. I do think that
why are we bothered with hosting this thing in Missouri?
Well, it's worth refiguring now because of the footprint of this conference. I do think, and maybe selfishly, that Dallas-Fort Worth, the Metroplex area, is about as central as you can get, because almost all of these all 16 of these teams in this conference next year, how many of them can drive to anywhere? If you say Dallas-Fort Worth, there's quite a few that could drive. You know, Lubbock could drive, Stillwater, Waco, Fort Worth, obviously, wherever that is. So, I mean, there's a lot just boom right there that could pretty easily drive, but then everybody else is flying. And probably less so for Kansas City. There's probably more people flying to Kansas City or more teams than would be flying to Dallas. And I feel like once you get to that threshold where there's more teams flying than driving, then who cares where it is? Pick the place that makes the most sense financially, could make the conference the most money, get the most people there, if 10 out of the 16 teams are going to have, if their fans are going to have to fly in, then have it where you want.
I don't know. I just, like I said, my perspective as a Texan, which I know kind of skews everything because Texas is not the central of this. It's not the center of this conference.
No, it's
being that, I mean, there will be four Texas teams. But
really Kansas is about the center geographically.
But you know how many teams, how many Big 12 teams are in the state of Missouri, Michael?
Zero. I believe it's zero. Yes, that's zero. Accurate.
Again, it's just as easy to fly to Dallas. I guess you could also, like, if you want to bring that up, you could say, well, you can, if everybody's flying, then put it wherever the heck you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, to your point, but like, okay, well, then is Las Vegas an outrageous suggestion then?
Probably. I bet it is because there's going to be a lot of, then that rules out. Well, I don't know. I think it is. I think that there'd be a lot of people up in arms about that, about the tradition of Kansas City.
Nobody cares.
Being in Kansas City, Missouri.
Anyways. All right. Let's do the current rankings, ratings, and then get to talking about, no. Let's talk about how Texas Tech got to where they are rankings-wise by dismantling the Bears. Yes. 78-68 on Saturday.
In a no-doubter, except for like a very short window.
Yeah,
second half.
There were a few minutes there, a little shaky.
There was a short window, but aside from that, pretty much just a complete no-doubter.
Especially with the way the game started. I don't have it. I can't remember exactly what it was, but Texas Tech got off to such a hot start and Baylor had such a cold start. You built like a 14-point lead.
Yes.
Baylor was not able to hit the broadside of a barn. Couldn't.
It was 16-2 after 5 minutes of play.
Scott Drew, I remember we were running around. Scott Drew called two timeouts within a minute because of what was happening in that first half. Now, that did eventually, it evened out, and then Baylor ended up taking the lead in the second half. So, like, they climbed all the way back in it, made it interesting, and then Texas Tech was able to pull away there at the end. You had three guys offensively in double figures, three more that had 8 points. Pop Isaacs led your Red Raiders in scoring with 20. He led all scorers. 20 points. Darian Williams had himself a pretty good game, 16 points in 25 minutes. Chance McMillan added in another 11 points. Kerwin Walton, Joe Toussaint, Robert Jennings. Jennings had himself a heck of a game. He finishes with only 8 points in 20 minutes. He did end up filing out, and that was one thing that was getting a little hairy there in the second half. Well, and it started off early because I know Jennings and Isaacs picked up some quick fouls. Isaacs ended up finishing off the last like 8 minutes of the game with 4 fouls. Jennings does foul out, but early on he had a couple of possessions that were like back to back in the first half while Texas Tech was building their lead, where he was just all over the court. He was imposing defensively, grabbing rebounds. And then getting downhill. He finished the night 3 of 4 from the field and added in 2 more free throws, 7 rebounds, an assist, and a steal. So 8 points on 75% shooting in 20 minutes with 7 boards. Darian Williams had himself a double-double, 11 rebounds. 10 of those were defensive rebounds. You had 40 team rebounds on the night, but
won the rebound battle, which is crazy with Baylor's length, you know, 40 rebounds to 29, but also partially because Baylor couldn't hit anything. Love to see it. you know, Baylor shot as a team from three, 12% in the first half. They were 1 for 8. They finished 5 for 21 on the night, so 24%. They shot 44% from the field overall, so that's pretty great, but you're not going to beat a team on the road when Texas Tech shot 48% in the first half from the field, exactly 50 in the second half, and then shot 35% from three. They actually got hotter from three in the second half, going from 30 to 40%. So just a perfect storm for the Waco Bears to have to endure this on the road, an onslaught of a team that can't miss. And then you're the team on the road that can't hit anything and can't get a rebound. And there's a lot of opportunities for rebound because balls are just bricking all over the place.
Yeah. Neither team shot the free throw very well. Both teams missed seven. Yeah. Texas Tech finished 17 of 24. Baylor finished 11 of 18. Somehow Baylor was able to finish that first half shooting 42% from the field, but like it was probably single digits there for a minute. And then shot 46% in the second half. Texas Tech shot a cool 50% from the field in the second half. So as good as they were offensively in the first half, they were better the second half, from the field and from three. You mentioned the 3-point, but man, it was just going into the game. I know we had a comment last week about how does the game look for Saturday. I didn't think you really had that much of a chance. I just thought Baylor was going to be able to get in there and abuse you. But this just goes to show like the growth and the progression of this team, still figuring out how to play against big teams without your big, Warren Washington missed another game. I mean, the last time he played was on the 24th. So 3 weeks ago against UCF, but that was when he re-aggravated his injury. He was first injured 2 weeks before that versus Kansas, the 12th of February. You found out that Texas Tech is still somehow 4-2 in the 6 games that he's missed.
Yeah, it surprised me, especially the way they looked at Iowa State immediately the first game without Washington, and then the way they looked at UCF, basically losing those two in a row without him. Although he did technically play at UCF, so that doesn't count. So yeah, Tech without their big has made enough adjustments and gotten enough production from the bench, specifically from McMillan coming off the bench, and you know having Jennings come in and Yalaho,
yeah, Emily Yalaho.
Sorry about that. coming in, giving some good minutes, but they get in foul trouble quick because that's about the only option. But yeah, Tech was, I mean, they had a good stretch there even without Washington. The loss at Iowa State and at home, that blowout versus UT, which still kind of stinks, but was able to take down TCU at home, win games you should win on the road at West Virginia and Oklahoma State, although that West Virginia one was pretty hairy. The Oklahoma State was not. That was pretty much over when it started. And then to take care of Baylor at home, that's a big a big task, and a very good team, a very well coached team, one that Tech played well in Waco but ultimately lost. So yeah, this coaching staff, I mean, I know we're not to the grades yet, but I think I'm going to grade them pretty highly. Yeah, based off a lot of reasons.
Undefeated in March thus far.
Just that's true.
Throw that out there. Yeah. So historically, with that performance, you wrap up the season, Haslametrics, a pretty significant jump, 36 to 25. So 25th in Haslam, 25th in KenPom, 24th in BPI, 29th in Brett Torvik T-Rank, and 30th in net. You finish the regular season 5-8 in quad 1 games, 4-1 in quad two, and then undefeated in quad three or four at 13-0. Big 12 tournament for Texas Tech will be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, selection Sunday for the big dance. After winning on Saturday, Texas Tech has worked its way up into the conversation of potentially getting a 6th seed, which is huge in terms of the difference between like an 8-9 and a 6 based on like where you fall in the brackets. But before we get there, Michael, this season from Grant McCaslin, first season, I know we'll talk about like Adams in his first season, historic, and he put up something like 27 wins in his first year. And then you can talk about the roster he inherited from when Beard left. But this is only the fifth time in the last 20 seasons that Texas Tech has had a double-digit conference win season. Bob Knight did it in 2004, 2005 with a 10-6 record. Beard did it in 17-18 with 11-7. And then the 18-19 run, he went 14-4. And then Adams' first season went 12-6. And then, of course, this year, McCaslin 11-7.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on this perspective because I'm blown away by what this team was able to accomplish this season. And I know it's not over. It's just, this is the regular season is. So this is kind of where we're stopping and taking a breath. But for McCaslin to do what he did, for these players to step up in the way they did with some, you know, Cambridge's injury super early on in the season, Washington's injury right at crunch time of the Big 12 schedule, and able to squeak out some wins in a really tough conference. I think most people, especially on these three wins in a row, I've seen mostly positive things from fans, and I just want to keep that going because what we just saw is not something we see very often. And that's what Spencer was just saying. You know, this is the fifth time in two decades that we've seen a Texas Tech team win double digit conference wins. It's also only the fifth time in that same span that Texas Tech has won 22 or more games. Yes, that does include postseason for some of these other teams, but for this team, obviously no postseason yet and have already hit that 22 mark. 11 conference wins is tied for the fourth most ever in 99 seasons of Texas Tech basketball. Now, there's a lot of seasons where there were 12 wins or 11 wins, but that's just insane to me. Yeah. So it's not like we're constantly seeing above 11. This is only, and you mentioned the single digit losses too. Now, definitely a caveat. This is before postseason, but this is only the second time in the last 20 seasons to finish with a single digit loss for the season, at least the regular season. So, 18-19, with 7 losses, but that included that incredible tournament run. And then, of course, this year it's 9 so far. You mentioned which this
means,
too.
Which means that regular season ended with only 5 losses.
Oh, yeah. Nuts. Just blown away by that.
Because you didn't win the Big 12 title, the Big 12 tournament, and then you lost in overtime to Virginia. It's possible 23-24 does not end in double-digit losses. You'd have to win the Big 12 tournament. You'd have to win the big dance.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that.
You could officially win out.
You could
end on a win.
Only one team does it. Well, I guess two, if you consider the other tournament, the NIT.
You could pull a Shorzy, which I know you don't get this reference, but and just say, we're never going to lose again. I can't do a Shorzy impression. It'd be terrible. One more thing. I'm all about perspective here, guys, but I think most of y'all are on board with me, but I still want to just bring this up every now and then to keep us grounded. Just 10 years ago, Tech finished 14-18 and 6-12, which is about what the Lady Raiders did this year. So, you know, it was still an improvement. And so that was after Tubby Smith's first year. And fellas, we were thrilled we were thrilled about 14 and 18. We were jacked about 6 and 12 because the two seasons prior to that were a combined 19 and 43 overall and 6 and 28 in conference play under Gillespie and Chris Walker, who just inherited a mess and did the best he could. And prior to that, Tech hadn't made it to the tournament since 2007 and wouldn't again until 2016. So a 9-year stretch without even a hint, really, without even being on the bubble, I don't think, mm-hmm. of being in the tournament. And now Tech is it's a bust year if Tech's not in the tournament. And it's a bust year if Tech's not in the top half of the conference and competing for a title. I just think that these are all things to keep in mind when evaluating a first-year head coach who's had these injuries. And I just feel like, as fans, we're playing with house money right now. I think as long as Tech is competitive in the rest of the games they have, I am going to be that guy that's thrilled that they're there, because I just wanted them to be in the top half of the conference. And I felt like that was an attainable goal, but also one that they may not meet. They could have easily only won 8 conference games or 7. And I still would have felt probably pretty good about the trajectory of this program. But the fact that they were able to put together what they did and go on this last little run to end the season or the regular season, I'm excited. I'm a little bit jacked. But I just feel like, whatever happens beyond here, fantastic. We've already made the trip. We've already seen the show. If they come out for an encore, great. They've already come out for like 2 encores. If they don't come out for a third, it's fine. We got our money's worth. The lights can come on. We can get in a cab and go home.
Okay. Coming into the season, Texas Tech, Vegas projected 18.8 wins, 10.2 losses, 9.4 conference wins, 8.6 conference losses. Texas Tech exceeded both total wins and conference wins to finish 22-9, 11-7. Michael, your postseason season 1 grade for McCaslin, I think we have a pretty good idea. You're high on him and his progress. What is it? What's your grade for Coach Gass?
I think I was going to give him a B. Let me finish this thought. If they had gotten 7th in the conference, I would have felt like, hey, that's above what that's way above a passing grade to me. I almost want to give him an A+, but I'm going to reserve the A+ because I hope that there's another season that's somehow more impressive than this one. So I'm giving him an A, just easily, and could pretty easily talk myself into an A+ because of how he managed his personnel. He went for streaks where his guards just weren't making shots. And there's not a lot he can do about that in the moment, except just try to adjust to what the defense is giving them, maybe get them to the free throw line some more, get some of his bench guys involved. I mean, he does adjust to that, but, you know, unfortunately Pop would have these games where he'd go 1-for-10 here and there, and that's not ideal, and there's not a whole lot a head coach can do about that in the moment. But they still found a way to win some of those games. Yeah. And with a completely new roster, just about, new school, new everything, probably a new philosophy to an extent, even for the guys that came back, to clean up kind of the funk in the room that was left there from Adams and his folks, and how he left and things that were said to players. There was just a lot of off the court things that he had to handle from day one. And I felt like he did as good a job as he could, and man, does he coach. He is a coaching coach. So anyway, I'm giving him an A.
All right. I think I'm going to go a little bit I'm gonna go like a B plus.
Okay.
You did exceed expectations. There were flashes there. There were certainly times when we were singing his praises about how great he was, not statistically, with his strategery, right? Like he'd call a timeout at the perfect time and then come out of it just on fire or completely swing the momentum. But there were also some questions about roster management. Like I to be fair to McGaslin, I don't know like where the blame air quotes falls here, but like, there are players on this roster that are non-contributors where they were previously, or they had at other points in the season. And then, they just kind of fell off the radar, right? I don't want to be too critical and say like what happened early on in the season overseas has anything to do with what McCaslin has control over. But that's still a thing.
True.
But like, okay, so for instance, Damarian Williams, he's a senior. Did he play at all this year?
Not that I'm aware of it. Well, and Lamar Washington was really, he wasn't seen much at all. But in his defense, Chance McMillan emerged as probably one of the best six men in the conference, and Kerwin Walton kind of got his groove back. He had been just relegated to the bench himself the last couple of seasons and was a big contributor, especially in a handful of games, you know, the only contributor sometimes, and stepped up in a big way. So I get what you're saying, but I do think there were some other developments that he was able to do with some new guys or some guys that had been there a while and just hadn't been able to get on the floor, but he found a way to get him out there, and it was the right decision.
Yeah. Like there is certainly some, mixed bag, right? Look, you talked about Lamar Washington, like what happened to him, Damarian Williams, but then you definitely hit on Darian Williams. Joe Toussaint was that guy for you at points in this season. Warren Washington was definitely the guy you went and you leaned on a whole lot. But then like Kyron Lindsey, you can't fault him for Cambridge or injuries like that. But you know, the development of Robert Jennings, maybe out of like necessity, but like, he certainly gets credit for that emergence, pressing Yalaho into action again out of necessity. But like, he certainly took some big steps forward very quickly. Unfortunately, I think this roster is going to look completely different next year too.
The nature of it.
Some of your biggest contributors are seniors or super seniors. Other guys maybe seeking out more playing time or opportunities elsewhere. So again, like how does he handle rosters? You know, this one will be all on him, right? Like we gave him a little bit of a pass with this roster he was able to kind of scrape together that he, you know, he compiled very quickly after he was hired. Dealing with what was left and whatever from the previous staff, but now moving forward, like it's 100% on him. So what's that going to look like next year? How many guys of this roster are going to come back? How many guys are going to be meaningful contributors? So we'll see. But like I said, I give him a B plus.
That's fair.
Let's quickly go through the rest of the Big 12. Where we hit and where we missed. In order of the preseason projections, Kansas topped out at the top to go basically 23 and, well, 22.5 and 6.5, and to win 13 conference games to just five. They ended up going 22-9 and 10-8 in conference play. I had thought Kansas was going to be pretty good, much better than how they ended up performing this year. I took the over of 13-5. Don't know why. Michael definitely took the under and was correct there. Houston, we were both wrong. We took the under of basically 23-6 and 12.5, 5.5 and in Big 12 play. They went 28-3, 15-3 in conference play. Both wrong there. BYU picked to finish third. Somehow they went, they were picked 21-9. They ended up going 22-9, 10.4 to 7.7. And their projected conference, they ended up going 10-8. So that's right at what they were projected. Both Michael and I took the under. We were both wrong there. I was wrong on Texas. I took the over at 21-9 and 10.4, 7.6. They finished 20-11. 9-9 in Big 12 play. Michael with the emotional hedge there gets the correct. I'm just kidding. He correctly saw.
No, it was absolute hater pick.
He saw the Longhorns for what they were.
Sure.
Frauds.
Saw through the charade.
I say that knowing that we lost to them. Under there from Michael with the correct pick. TCU 21-9 ended up going 20-11. 10-8 in Big 12 was their projection. They ended up going 9-9. I took the under. That hit just barely. Michael took the over and was wrong. We were all correct on Baylor hitting the over of their preseason. I don't know what they were all down on in the desert there for the Waco team. But they finished 22-9, 11-7 in Big 12 play, just like Texas Tech. We were both right on taking the over. We're just going to call them Waco now. Iowa State, they were, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, picked to finish eighth and way overperformed and hit second. They were picked to go 19.5, 9.5, and finished up 24-7 and 13-5 in Big 12 play. Michael took the over there, saw that they were undervalued. I didn't think they had the juice, but I was wrong. Oklahoma, we were both wrong. They hit the over on their preseason numbers when they went 20-11, 8-10 in Big 12 play. We were both wrong there. Kansas State also hit the over, and Michael and I were both correct there as they went 18-13, 8-10. That sophomore slump for Jerome Tang, I guess, and just the roster management there. I hope we don't see that same kind of downfall for Texas Tech as we saw with Kansas State year one to year two. I've got this all green, but this can't be correct.
For Cincinnati?
Yeah. Well, I think what it is basically they hit almost exactly where they're predicted. 18.2 and 12.8. They finished 18-13. 7.4 and 10.6 in conference play, they went 7-11. We both took the under, which is technically correct with the rounding down, but they also hit right at what they were projected to.
Yeah, it's a push at best.
So I gave us both credit for it.
Yeah.
West Virginia, we both took the over. We thought even at 6-12 or 7-11 in Big 12 play coming in.
Surely.
That was a little under. Nope, they finished 4-14. We were both wrong there.
Yikes.
UCF, I took the under. Michael took the over at basically 6-12 in Big 12 play. Michael was correct there. They hit 7-11, but Oklahoma State, we thought 5.2 conference wins was not enough. We were wrong there. They finished 4-14. So I finished 5-9. Michael hit a perfect. He hit a 500 there at 7-7, but that's including the Cincinnati push. So,
is that a new?
I guess so. A Cincinnati push.
Don't Google that. Don't Google the Cincinnati push. No, I mean, I think I'm just excited to see who Tech's going to play. Of course, Tech has lost to UCF. They're 1-1 to them. They did beat BYU on the road. Pretty healthy win in Provo on the 20th of January. So that was a lot's happened since then.
But, a lot, yeah.
Excited to have a little bit of basketball on at the office. 11:30 Thursday morning. I might take a second screen. I already have two screens. I might take a laptop or a tablet or something and just kind of have it playing.
It will not be on the plus. I think Thursday on out is all on ESPN or ESPN2.
That's correct.
So let's move over to baseball. What do you think?
I think so.
All right.
Good plan.
So disappointing weekend, I will say, Michael. They lose the series of the Longhorns 2-1. They took a little bit of a hit in the rankings following that. They dropped 10 spots in Baseball America from 14 to 24, 7 spots in D1 Baseball, 17 to 24, 5 spots in the National College Baseball Writers Association, 18 to 23. Dropped out from Perfect Game, 24 to non-ranked. And then 8 spots in the coaches poll, 17 to 25. Let me tell you how that happened, Michael. 1-2 on the weekend versus the Longhorns. It felt very much like offensively, if you weren't hitting home runs, you weren't doing anything. You hit 9 home runs on the weekend, which is a lot. But your starting pitching struggled. Well, just pitching in general. But you gave up 20 total walks on the weekend. Your team ERA jumped up 1.4 runs. Your batting average dropped 30 points. Tech batters struck out 23 times, and then you committed 7 errors, which doesn't feel like a lot when you talk about 3 games, but they were pricey, Michael. Let me tell you how. On Friday, top of the first, Pompey misplays a pop fly. Now, granted, it was a little bit windy, and he was running back. Which I think is why he wasn't credited with an error. But that runner reaches. That would have been the second out of the inning. The next batter after that pop fly misplay singles. But then there's a throwing error by Bravo. So now that run scored. That should have been a pop fly out. Inning continues. There's a strikeout, which should have ended the inning had Pompey caught that. Only the second out of the inning, and then a 3-run bomb. Mm. Texas scores 4 runs in the top of the first. Maybe this is revisionist history. You could have gotten out of that inning unscathed if Pompey does not miss that pop fly.
The wind was howling that day, though.
A little bit. Only seemed to hurt you, though.
Yeah.
And you're more used to it.
Trying to help.
You had more errors in the top of the ninth. Granted, at this point in the game, Texas Tech was already down 18-6. So throw that out there. The game's already in hand. First batter, top of the ninth, reaches on a fielding error on Stripling at first base. Bases would then get loaded and then cleared with a grand slam. You gave up 4 more runs.
I think I vaguely remember hearing that. Because I just wanted to listen to it just in case. And that was the most unenthusiastic grand slam I believe Jeff Haxton has ever called. Because he was on the Friday night call since Tech. He was on Friday and Sunday on the radio.
Since best.
And that's home. A grand slam. It was.
No, granted.
Really.
The Longhorns end up playing up 22 runs on Friday. You end up losing this game 22-8. 8 of those runs from the Longhorns assisted directly by errors on the Red Raiders.
Gosh.
So losing 14-6 or 14-18. Nope. 14-8 still would have sucked. Would have sucked. But getting embarrassed the way you did Friday night, 22-8, didn't help. Saturday, top of the second. So again, early inning, early game error. Pompey, throwing error by Pompey with 2 outs, did not end up advancing though. So that one doesn't end up hurting you.
Pompey is a freshman, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Top of the fourth, fielding error by Pompey. Two outs. Runner did not end up advancing. So those two errors from Pompey didn't end up hurting you.
Thankfully. Harm, no foul.
No harm, no foul. Top of the ninth, one out. Fielding error by Cade McGee. Runners ended up on second, third. No runs ended up scoring. So look at that. The game you win, you've got three errors, but
just better luck.
None of them ended up hurting you at all. Yeah. None of them ended up scoring. Sunday, top of the second. So all three games within the first two innings, you've committed an error. Sunday, you have a bunt. Bad throw. You get two guys on base. On the very next hit, both of those guys end up scoring. So, had you not had the error there, you would have had at least an out. I don't think you would have been able to turn two. But you would have, one, at least reduced the damage when the next guy comes up to hit. Texas Tech in the bottom of the first inning had scored three. Texas, top of the second, comes back. Aided by this bunt, gets right back in this game. Top of the sixth, inning starts with a fielding error by Pompey. Batter gets to second on this error. So not only did he reach base, but he ultimately got over to second base. Immediately scores with the next batter, who hits a double. Texas goes on to score three runs in that inning to take the lead and ultimately win the game. I think what you saw tonight, the Raiders are back on the diamond tonight. Pompey was playing second base. He got moved. Unofficially, I hesitate to give him an error, but like I'm counting it against him. He had four errors this weekend. It's not good. And he wasn't the only one, so I don't want to like pile on Pompey. And one, you need to realize he's still a freshman. Sometimes this happens. He goes through a stretch. You get in your head, whatever. But he got moved. A couple of notes from the games. Friday night, again, you end up losing 22-8, but Texas scores their biggest inning. The most runs of any inning in the fourth inning. They scored seven. This is before it really gets out of hand. They scored all seven of those runs, Michael, with two outs. You couldn't get that third out. Could not get that third out.
That's not two out magic. That's a two out curse.
It was two out magic for the Horns.
Jeez.
On the night, they hit four home runs, Michael. Two of them were three run bombs. Two of them were grand slams. Mm. So they put up 14 runs on four swings. Saturday, you win 7-2. Hooray. Ultimately didn't matter the outcome of the game, but Tech got a runner on third with no outs. Did not end up scoring. But that would go to kind of highlight your troubles over the weekend hitting with runners in scoring position. You went 6-32.
Yikes.
Bright spot, Cash went 4-5. With two RBI, and then some of your young guys, Stripling was in the lineup at DH, went 2-3. Maxi went 3-4 with four RBI. And then we talked about the errors on Sunday. You ended up losing that one 9-7. Mac Hewer Hoyer, whatever, however you want to pronounce his name. He got the start on the mound Saturday. Was quite impressive so far this season. In his starts, he has gone 11 total innings, given up 8 hits, 3 runs, only 1 walk to 9 strikeouts, has given up 3 bombs as a starter. So batters are hitting best against him, but he has the lowest ERA. Opponents are batting 444 against Mac, but he's posted up a 245 ERA and then has the lowest whip of all starters at 0.82. Your starting pitching, Michael, has been atrocious this season. Through 49 and a third innings pitched by your starters, they've given up 53 runs on 67 hits, 31 walks to 56 strikeouts, 13 doubles, 12 home runs. Opponents are batting a cool 320 against your starters.
Good night.
With a combined ERA of 8.94. Including a 1.99 whip.
What's the hashtag for starting pin is broken? Or how do you
starting pin is bad?
Yeah, starting pin is bad. I don't know.
Your bullpen has been significantly better.
Yeah.
So Max Hoefling came in and got the final out of the game tonight. On one pitch. Bases were loaded with two outs in the ninth. He got a pop-up on one pitch. Trenton Parrish did not fare so well this weekend. Sunday, he came in and got roughed up quite a bit. Ryan Free and Josh Sanders are your go-to guys out of the pen. Free in a 10 and a third inning so far this season's only allowed 6 hits, 1 run. It was earned, 3 walks to 7 strikeouts. Opponents are hitting 171 against Free. ERA of 0.87 with the exact same whip. Sanders in 9 and a third innings has given up 7 hits, 4 run, only 2 earned, 1 walk to 13 strikeouts. Has given up a home run. Opponents are batting 200 against Sanders with a 193 ERA and a 0.86 whip. Your bullpen combined, this is before tonight's game, combined have gone 68 and two thirds innings, given up 80 hits, 41 runs, 37 of those earned, 70 strikeouts to 28 walks, much better ratio than your starters who are like a 2-1 almost. A little bit better there with your bullpen, only given up 2 home runs from your bullpen versus the 12 from your starters. 290 average up from the opponents with a 485 whip. So just about 485 ERA, just about half what your starters are allowing, and a 1.57 whip.
Do you think, or is it even a strategic, or is it a good idea to even do what I'm going to suggest or throw out there? Do you think there's any chance some of the bullpen guys could start here and there when in the past they would have always remained in the bullpen? Do you think that might be something Tadlock could toy with, or is he probably going to stick with the starters he has now?
Well, Hoyer, whatever you want to call him, did start up as a bullpen arm and has moved to a starter. I don't know who else besides Tabor Fast who could do it. He did have a start there in Albuquerque.
That's right.
But the rest of his appearances have come out of the bullpen. I don't know, because you don't want to lose your go-to guys out of the pen. Like when you need them, like you want Ryan Free, Josh Sanders, Hoefling. Nobody else is really impressed, really. I mean, Hudson Parker before tonight, I don't know what happened tonight. He's only gotten 3 1/3 innings, but given him 1 hit, no runs, 4 walks to 2 strikeouts. So that's backwards, but opponents are hitting only 100 against him. With no runs given up, his ERA is 0, but he's only faced 10 batters, or he had before tonight. I don't know how he did tonight. I don't know who else, like who's there in the bullpen that could move up, unless you went with a couple of guys, but you know, you went with like an opener basically, and then a long reliever, and like a Hoefling or somebody. I don't know.
I would think the problem we're seeing was exacerbated a bit by Texas offensive talent, but it still is alarming to see your starters carrying a pretty much a 9.0 ERA.
Yeah, well, that's on the season.
Yeah, no, I know.
It wasn't because you got blown up on Friday night. Kyle Robinson's ERA is up to an 8 now after what happened on Friday. But Jack Washburn also, like, he's getting beat around pretty bad on Sundays, which is so frustrating because, like, he's got really great stuff, but then, like, I guess they're just seeing him really well. He has an opponent batting average of 333 with a 7.8 ERA. Zane Petty got the start tonight, so, like, his numbers dropped quite a bit. I think I heard in the broadcast they dropped, like, 3 points, his ERA, three runs. But before tonight, his ERA was 11. Opponents are batting 324 against him.
Yeah.
Jacob Rogers has moved from a starting role to the bullpen. So he's gone the opposite direction that you were talking about. He has 11.05 ERA. So I just don't know who else is there. I know you've lost a starter in Brady Trumbello with his injury, and he will not be back this year. I don't think you've got enough guys in the bullpen that you could trust to do a double role there with an opener and a long reliever. Zane Petty may be getting his issues worked out. Like I said, he did really well tonight as your starter. He gets the win tonight. He went, let's see, 6 full innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, 2 earned, 1 walk to 7 strikeouts, and threw 93 pitches. Derek Bridges, again, like, he's got to figure it out. He went 1 inning, 1 hit, 2 runs, both earned, on a walk and a strikeout. Hudson Parker, 1 hit, 2 runs, 2 earned, no walks, no strikeouts. Those two guys got on base by the hit by pitch. Cole Case went 1 2/3, 1 hit, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. Max Huffling got the last out, so a third of an inning with a bunch of zeros because he threw one pitch. Offensively, though, you did run up against some really good arms this weekend. So your numbers took a dip, but still, as a team coming in tonight, you were batting 349, slugging 620, on base of 471. You hit 29 home runs, scored 185 runs to 102 strikeouts. You're perfect on the season. Stolen bases, 19 of 19. Defensively, you're allowing teams to hit 292 against you. A team ERAs is including your bullpen 602, with 60 walks to 139 strikeouts, 17 home runs surrendered, 97 runs scored against you. Your fielding percentage took a big hit after this weekend. It's down to 961. That's not good. You're fielding 21 errors in 15 games. Now, as I point out this weekend, many of those have led to extended innings and then run scoring, either run scored or run scoring opportunities for your opponents. And the Longhorns took advantage of it this weekend. So you got a chance to get right. You got the win tonight against New Mexico State, 13-7. We watched that one go final just a few minutes ago. And then you get them again tomorrow afternoon, Wednesday. And then you hit the road at Baylor, at Waco, 4-11. Although I think they were playing, who did they play today? They played
today. Oh, yeah, I'll check into that.
It may have been, they played Stephen F. Austin, and they beat him pretty bad, 17-4. So the Bears are getting right. Just kidding. No, the Baylor's not good. They're 5-11 on the season. They got swept this weekend, 0-3 to start Big 12 play. Obviously not many bright spots on the schedule when you go 5-11. But your weekend series, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 6:30 first pitch Friday, 2 p.m. Saturday, 1 p.m. Sunday. offensively for the Bears, they are hitting as a team 252. So almost a full 100 points short of what you're batting. Slugging 364. So they're just hitting a lot of singles, man. To compare, you're slugging 620. On base of 351. They've hit 9 home runs on the season to your 29. They've scored 76 runs, struck out 139 times, and are about 500 on stolen base attempts, 6 of 11. Offensively, in terms of guys at the plate, you're worried about one guy. Outfielder, he plays a lot of right field. Enzo Apodaca, 375 average, 435 on base, 625 slug. Slugging 4 doubles, 2 home runs, 10 strikeouts, and 1 of 1 stolen bases. Michael, no other starter for the Bears hits higher than 254.
So he's
it.
Oh my gosh. So there are several that the 252 average, he's a lot of the reason why it's even that high.
Yeah, because there's only one other guy above the team average of 252. He's at 254. Let's see. Batting. Yeah, so that's Ty Johnson. Well, it went... A lot of that did take a bump up today, so give them credit for what they did tonight against Stephen F. Austin. Apodaca's average now up to 390. Ty Johnson, 277. Wesley Jordan, 268. Will Pendergrass, 255. All of those guys are now above 250. As a team, they're hitting 264.
That's impressive that those numbers updated jumped that quickly.
Their average as a team jumped up 12 points in one game. They're
poor Lumberjacks.
A little bit better on the mound than they are at the plate. They're definitely better than you on the mound. Opponents are batting 274 against them. Opponents are batting 292 against you. They have a team ERA of 568. 74 walks to 143 strikeouts. So about the same number of strikeouts, but 14 more walks have the Bears surrendered than Tech. Both teams have allowed 97 runs coming into tonight's game. 17 home runs given up by Texas Tech, 19 by Baylor. And somehow they're a little bit worse in the field, 959 fielding percentage. They've got two starters that I feel pretty confident you'll see, Mason Marriott and Colin McKinney. Both of them have 4 starts. Marriott has a 568 ERA and a 1.63 whip through 19 innings. He's given up 20 hits, 12 earned runs, 24 strikeouts to 11 walks. Opponents are batting 270 against him. And then Colin McKinney, I think most recently started on Sunday for them. Again, 4 starts, 688 ERA, so not great, but hard to dunk on teams when you would take a 688 ERA from one of your starters. Mm-hmm. 147 whip through 17 innings, 17 hits, 13 earned runs, 14 strikeouts to 8 walks. Opponents are batting 258. And the other guy I think you'll probably see is Mason Green. He's got 5 appearances on the season. 4 out of the bullpen. One was an extended run for him, which I think got him the start last weekend. So he has 1 start, 4 out of the bullpen. 514 ERA, 164 whip through 14 innings pitched, 15 hits surrendered, 8 earned runs, 12 strikeouts to 8 walks. Opponents are batting 273 against Mr. Mason Green. Baylor's not good. You're on the road. You expect to win this series. You'll have to take your bats on the road. They're not too terrible of a pitching team. Offensively, though, Baylor's terrible. So, take that.
And unfortunately, defensively, it seems pretty evenly matched, at least when it comes to fielding. I wonder if that will come into play again, if it will be some games that are tighter than they should be, and then some errors force or allow innings to go on longer than they should, and the games get a little bit closer because of the combination of starting pitching and, you know, some young guys playing some key positions. But
yeah, hope not.
I don't know. You can't take anything for granted even on the road. I mean, not especially on the road is what I should say. But I like what I hear. I would expect Texas Tech to at the very least win the series and sweep, but there's no telling. There's no telling what could happen in the Waco Bears house.
The Waco Bears. Yeah. Yeah. A sweep would be great. A series win is what I'm expecting.
Yes, please. Just let's get that.
All right, let's wrap this up with what did we learn, Michael? What do you say?
Okay.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either.
All right. This is all you, man. What you got?
Okay. This is more of a shout out. I learned my wife is awesome. I've known this for a long time.
How long have you guys been married now? I'm just kidding. You don't have to ask that.
Let me see. It'll be 12 years soon. Okay. But we had a get together this weekend. And so she loves to bake. And it was a, you know, some friends with families. And so kids were coming. And so it was, you know, a lot of families our age and with kids, our kids' age. So she was trying to think of stuff that would feed everybody and everybody would like it. And so the menu she came up with, of course, there was other stuff with it, but what she baked specifically were her famous chocolate chip cookies, which I need to get those to you sometime. I need to get her to make some. I'm calling them famous because the more I say it, the more true it will be. But they're made with dark chocolate chunks, and she does brown butter.
Ooh.
And so that gives it a lot more depth. And then she has brown sugar and cinnamon in it. And of course, she always just downplays it. Oh, it's just some recipe I found online. Yeah, but she really, really makes the hell out of those cookies. Yeah, they're fantastic. So she had made a batch beforehand. She'd also made a batch of cupcakes that she froze and then made the frosting or the icing. I always get that wrong. The day of. And they were kind of like a chai spice cupcake.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
I couldn't tell you what all was in them, but they were delicious. And they looked really pretty. And everybody liked them. Everybody liked the chocolate chip cookies. But the main course, which was... I mean, I'm not going to pick a favorite, but this is up there. She made pizza rolls.
Okay.
And by pizza rolls, the recipe she used, she made her own pizza dough and she flattened out the pizza dough.
Ooh.
And then she rolled them up like you would a cinnamon roll. So on that flat piece of pizza dough, she had pizza sauce, cheese, pepperonis, maybe something else. And then she rolled up that dough and then let them chill a little bit and individually cut up in cinnamon roll pizza rolls and set them out to bake. And when you bake them, you put some mozzarella cheese on top. And then when you serve them, she had pizza sauce on the side and Dion's Ranch on the side.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, man. It was, anyway, just a shout out to her. She's pretty great.
I want all those
things. Not just because she can cook really well, but that's the focus of today's what I learned.
So one, it sounds like we need to organize like a chocolate chip cookie exchange because we make the it's not like a secret. I mean, it's the recipe on the Crisco can, but it's a pretty dang good recipe. And we make the heck out of those.
I think until Allison discovered the one she's been on now for the last couple of years, our favorite was, I think, the Toll House bag. Whatever was on the Toll House bag, she made that for a while. And it's just a hit, man. I have had y'all's famous chocolate chip cookies.
What?
I remember y'all dropped some off one time.
And now I think
y'all
remember.
Had made a bunch for some reason, and y'all just dropped some off one day. Y'all are feeling generous.
I can't remember what we made. Like if those were actually ours or if we just got like the pre-made dough. Cause when we were selling our house 2 years ago, we made a lot of chocolate chip cookies before showings. We were trying to just, you know, that subliminal message. You walk into a house, fresh chocolate chip cookie smell, and we leave the plate out of
you could live here.
Yeah, yeah. And we left the cookies out for people. And no, I was not going to like make huge batches of our chocolate chip cookies and like just pull some out to bake. We ended up buying a lot of the pre-made tubes from, United, which were a big hit. One of the ultimate buyer that ended up buying the house made a comment, somehow that got to it. I was like, man, the cookies were a hit. I was like, yeah, of course they were.
I think we might have to make pizza rolls when we put ours on the market. That might be what we do. Oh man, it smells like pizza in here. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Bacon. Who doesn't love pizza?
Great thing to eat does not smell the best when you walk in the house. Like, man, that's kind of heavy.
Onions too.
Onions. Wonderful taste.
Yes.
Grilled onions, but like it leaves a pretty heavy smell. Chocolate chip
onions
though,
are rough. Yeah.
All right. So have you gone to go see Dune?
Not yet. So last night we decided, okay, it's on Hulu for those of you who have all the things, but on Hulu, there are three or four commercial breaks, but they were surprisingly, and for a 3-hour movie, one, that's incredible, but they were like 2 minutes a piece. So I was kind of worried because you can see how many breaks there are. And I thought, oh gosh, these are going to be like 7-minute commercial breaks. They weren't. So if you have Hulu and you want to fire up Dune, go right ahead and you're not going to watch a ton of commercials. And like the last hour and a half are commercial free somehow, something like that. Sorry, what?
One or two.
The first one.
Okay. I've not seen the first one. So
we saw the first one, not in theaters though, but we rented it and had wished we'd seen it in theaters. And so we have in our head that we're going to see the second one, but I had to see the first one again just because it has been 3 years. And yes, I read the book, but that was like 5 years ago. And that is a very dense text for those of you who haven't read it.
I've not.
I will forget more of it than I will remember. That's for sure. So we fired it up last night. Really enjoyed it. Got really excited. We're going to go see it in IMAX this week because we didn't get to see the first one in theater at all. But the thing I'm worried about, I think I'm addicted to subtitles, Spencer. It was so...
Game changer, man.
Oh, man. And it's one thing to be in a theater because you can have it ramped up. The sound just as loud as it can go or whatever. And it's not like you're going to bother your neighbor or wake your child or your spouse or whatever. So that's not a problem in a theater. I don't think I'll have that much of an issue, but man, there was a lot of stuff in this movie. If I didn't have the subtitles on, I wouldn't have caught it. And it's just kind of nice to see it. So seeing part two in the theater, I'm a little nervous that I'm becoming an old and I'm going to,
it's not just a,
what'd she say?
It's not just
that chatteratch. Why don't they just say it out loud?
It's not just about age, Michael. There's some also connection to neurodivergency that has like those that have ADHD or on that similar spectrum of issues can't differentiate too well when multiple things are going on. That's something that we found in our house. Like it was one, it started off with like a necessity, like we were trying to keep things quiet. They're like, wow, this is actually really helpful. And maybe that kind of formed a habit too, because now like we have to have subtitles on. One, you don't realize how much you miss.
Right.
Or like how much like dialogue is actually there. Like, oh wow, like I didn't even register that they said that or that was going on. It can also be distracting when the subtitles is different from what is actually being said. Like if like the subtitles are written based on a script versus what's actually in the recording. But that's fairly rare.
Or sometimes they'll get off and I can't explain that. That happens with Hulu quite a bit. Like you come back from a commercial break as you're watching a show and each commercial break you come back from, they're a little bit further and further, either ahead or behind of the audio. And that
we found that out with
throw you off.
I can't remember which show it was that we were watching. Cutthroat Kitchen. For whatever reason, Cutthroat Kitchen, the subtitles are like a good 5 seconds ahead. Which,
oh, that's brutal.
Normally, it's not that big of a deal. It's not that bad. But like as an elimination style reality TV show, whatever, the surprise or the reveal of like who got, you know, who got cut or who wins the thing is then ruined. Not ruined. It's just announced via subtitle several seconds before the audio is spoken. Anyways. Samantha's parents have Dune 2. Obviously her dad's like super into it. Her mom said it was one of the worst movies she's ever seen. Dune. So I was like, I don't know how Samantha's going to be into it. I'm interested to try it. I don't know. 3 hours is quite a commitment though.
It is. And the one thing I'd say, you know, I've talked about subtitles this whole time, but mainly for this movie, just because there's so many words that aren't of a language that we know. And so it's nice to see them written. And, oh, okay, that's how you spell that name. And so now you can kind of, all right, I understand that name now. That's that guy's name. Got it. Okay. So that helps me a lot. But the good thing about Dune is it's a visual movie. It's an audio movie. It's not got a ton of just dialogue going on. There will be several minutes at times where probably no one speaks, or they're just shouting like go or run or something. And then just some crazy epic thing is going on in the background that you don't have to listen to dialogue, but you get to hear Hans Zimmer do his thing and you get to hear all the audio stuff that they're doing.
Oh, well, okay. So you said Hans
that
Zimmer
part
did,
of it
did the soundtrack. I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know for a fact he did the first one. I'm assuming he did the second one, but I haven't actually confirmed that.
I think he has, because I follow him or whatever through Apple Music, or at least they see that I list a lot of his stuff, and they've been like teasing like a track here and there on Dune 2. So I know he did 2.
Okay, yeah, he definitely did one then. Okay. Yeah, because I looked it up during, as we were rewatching, and I thought surely this was Zimmer. This was my guy. And you look it up, yeah, it is. And I'm not saying this as a knock, because I feel like he still does it really well. I just find it interesting that he's able to score so many movies, but I couldn't hum a single thing. Yet when I hear it, I'm like, that's Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like John Williams where you could hum, dun, 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 dun. You know, you're just like, yeah, okay, Indiana Jones, got it. But Hans doesn't really have that so much.
No, it's just like a style.
Yeah. It's noise, but I mean that in the best way. It's obviously music, but it's just not as melodic, but it's very, I mean, it's emotional stuff. It gets you. I distinctly go back to, you know, how The Dark Knight Rises ends and how the music ended on that and everything. Gordon Levitt's character is in the cave or whatever, and you're like, oh man, that was incredible. And I can hear the music in my head, but I sure couldn't hum it if I wanted to. Didn't take anything away from it.
Much bigger fan of the soundtrack for Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises. But
I think so too. I haven't actually sat and listened to them, but I would probably agree with you.
Yeah. Anyways.
Good soundtrack talk here. Good composer talk.
Yeah, well, I think with that though, Michael, that'll do it for us. The 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm going to have to see. I'm going to have to work out how to go sit down for a 3-hour movie. Not anytime soon. Like in the very, very near future, we've got Texas Tech baseball today, tomorrow, and then this weekend, Big 12 tournament basketball. Texas Tech plays Thursday and beyond, Selection Sunday. Football's not that far around the corner. For Michael, I'm Spencer. We'll catch you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast. Help us out by subscribing, rating the show, and leaving a review. Follow us on Twitter at 23 Personnel, Spencer at Punt Suck, and Michael at Michael_LBK. Be sure to catch the next episode. And until then, guns up and let the tortillas fly.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.